Good evening and welcome to the Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting scheduled for tonight, November 1st. My name is Stacy Smith. I am a Planning Commissioner Vice Chair to the Commission and I will be hosting tonight's meeting. Our chair is absent for tonight. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask for introductions. Can I please start with our North End Commissioners?
Aaron Murphy, North Kitsap.
All right, and Central?
Stephen Bowe, Central Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
And good evening, I'm Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
And my South Kitsap colleague?
Jonathan Tudan, South Kitsap.
And Stacy Smith, also representing South Kitsap. All right, so I'm going to take a look at the agenda here and move us along with reading the virtual meeting protocol. So tonight we are a hybrid meeting, meaning we are half in person and half virtual. So some important requests. Out of respect for people speaking and listening, please mute all microphones, cell phones, and any other electronic devices prior to entering our meeting or when not actively speaking. If providing comment, approach our microphone or state your name and area of residence for the record. If you're joining us from our internet virtual platform, please click on the raise your hand feature to signal you'd like to comment. The sound will be unmuted and the internet participant should announce your name. The participant will be called upon to speak at the appropriate time. For call-in users, please dial *9. On your keypad to signal you'd like to comment. The last four digits of the call-in number will be announced and the sound unmuted. You should announce your first and last name before speaking. And call-in participants may need to dial *6 to unmute your phone. Written comments will also be read during public comment if they've been submitted to our staff and clerk through the email site by 2 p.m. the day of our meeting. And for general comment, each member of the public is limited to 2 minutes of internet call-in or written comments. So with that, I will move us along to adoption of tonight's agenda.
I move that the agenda be adopted as presented.
I second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in approval indicate by saying yes or raise your right hand. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, agenda is approved. Adoption of the minutes. We did receive our October 4th, 2022 meeting minutes. I'll entertain a motion.
I move the minutes of October 4, 2022 be adopted as presented.
Second.
And I see a second. Commissioner Beam, thank you. Discussion? All those in favor of approval indicate by saying aye or raising your hand. Opposed? Any abstentions? All right, those meeting minutes have been approved. Moving along to our last meeting minutes of October 18th, 2022. I'll entertain a motion to approve those meeting minutes.
I move that the meeting minutes of October 18, 2022 be approved as presented.
Thank you.
Second.
And I see a second from Commissioner Murphy. Discussion?
I will mention that Carrie Calton-Borncorey submitted a correction that she did not vote. She abstained from voting on the approval of the last minute, so I'll make that minor clerical correction.
Okay, thank you. Is she with us?
No, this was for the previous meeting. At the last meeting, they approved minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we'll make that minor edit. And the motion for October 18th is on the floor. Any further discussion? All right, I'll call for the motion. All those in approval, please indicate by saying aye or raising your hand. Opposed? And abstentions? Seeing none, those meeting minutes are approved. We are moving into our first of two general public comment periods. Is there anyone that wishes to provide comment to the commission?
I don't see any attendees.
Okay, so there's nobody in the chambers, there's nobody online. So we'll move along to the work study countywide planning policies update with the Kitsap County Deputy Administrator, Eric Baker.
Actually, I don't see Eric. Colin, are you going to be taking this one?
I did think that Eric was, and so I just sent him a message. Haven't heard back from him yet. Yeah, I thought that he would be presenting.
Okay.
So we can maybe just give him a minute. If not, I could do a quick overview. Okay.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and move along, and we'll just readjust.
I was going to just make a motion that we move ahead in the agenda and hope to circle back.
Sounds good. So there is a motion. Is there a second to that? Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Beam. And any further discussion? Well, all those that approve that slight agenda change, please indicate by raising your hand. And I see that all are in favor. So we will move along to deliberations and recommendations of the administrative code with the Department of Community Development Planning Supervisor, Colin Puff. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Yeah, thank you. This is just to come back to the administrative code edits that we had the Planning Commission public hearing a couple of weeks ago. I believe it was the 18th of October. And so for today's deliberations, I don't really have a presentation. There was no issues that arose during the hearing that I believe that need to be addressed at this time. One thing that came up was about the public comment period. So that has ended, the 30-day public comment period, which was combined with the SEPA programmatic DNS that we did. And so all of the materials that you have or that you had during the public hearing are the same, except for that public comment response matrix, which is only has a couple of more lines on it, but no changes were made based on those comments. So we've gone over all of those issues. The one change or the one comment that we received after the public hearing was from the Suquamish tribe. And the comment related to a few different issues. Mainly it was for about questioning about impervious surface maximums in our rural areas, but it wasn't necessarily related to the changes at hand. So we discussed that with them, and there was no changes made. And the other issue was one of the change number two on the summary of changes, which relates to the minimum density, footnote 25 that we discussed. And again, it was about the proliferation of garage. It's a comment that we had received before from the tribe about the proliferation of garages and if that would apply to footnote 25. And it's about residential density, so it didn't. It doesn't actually apply to this change, but we did discuss that with them as well, so no changes. I believe that's really the only thing to discuss that has changed since the public hearing. And I can also go ahead and share my screen and show the summary of changes as well. And I would ask you if you have anything in particular that you would like to that you'd like to discuss or questions that you'd like to ask me before deliberations.
Yes, Commissioner Shattuck.
Colin, I just had a chance. I want to make sure that I've got the proposed change involving the variance process when we've got someone who wants, there's a problem with a critical areas ordinance. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, hey, if I can get a dimensional variance, the critical areas ordinance variance, the need for that would go away. So mm-hmm. as I understand the changes, what we say is, hey, you need to go through the dimensional variance process first and then go to the critical areas ordinance variance process.
If I could just interrupt real quick, before we move into discussion on specific items that we're going to do, if we could maybe call for a motion to consider by paragraph to approve as presented by staff and amended by the Planning Commission.
Okay, so I will entertain a motion.
I move that we recommend to the Kitsap County Commissioners that the proposed administrative edits to the Kitsap County Code be adopted as presented by staff.
And amended by the Planning Commission.
I'm sorry, and?
And amended by the Planning Commission.
And yeah.
And amended by the Planning Commission. Okay, that was the motion. And I see a second from Commissioner Beam. Thank you. Further discussion? Do you want to go ahead?
So Colin, again, the question is, you know, we've gone through history where the idea was to let people wanting a land use process combine efforts. So, you know, we had used to have to do a separate SEPA appeal and a separate land use appeal. And everyone said, that's crazy because the process just takes too long. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that just one of was considered was providing applicants the opportunity to combine these two variance requests. So you're not dealing with months delays between the first variance request and the second variance request.
Yeah, that is a good point. We do actually try to do that as it is. We would combine if there was a need for a dimensional variance and a critical area reduction or critical area variance. In fact, we've seen that in the past. Those would be combined and reviewed at the same time because the point you make is correct that would be unnecessary time to approve one and then not sure if it would rely on the approval of the other and have to wait. So yeah, those are combined. I think what this is not to do one before the other. It's just it's an order of priority. And it's kind of standing policy already that a dimensional variance would kind of have a preference or a priority before considering impacting a wetland or something like that. So it's already the policy of the county and how things are typically done. This just kind of codifies that where if you have the choice, I suppose, if you didn't have to do both, that if you were able to proceed with a dimensional variance instead of a critical area variance, that you would do that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Other questions or comments? So should we move along by section by section?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful if we just start with section one, and if anyone has any comments or proposed changes or edits, that we could do that. And once we finish and you wrap up okay. Section one, just move to the next one. If you do have any proposed edits or amendments, we'll need to vote on, we'll have a motion to vote on those, and we'll take care of that vote before we move on to the next section.
Okay, so with those instructions, do we need to call for a motion to approve it the way it stands? No, okay, so nope, Any other comments on section one? Hearing none, we will move to section two. Comments? Section three, which is new for variances. Any comments in that section? Section four, land division and development, approval timeframes. All right, moving along to section five, land division and development. Yes, Commissioner Shattuck.
I just want to make sure the record reflects the comments that we had from staff regarding that there would be no requirement under the new section for consecutive hearings, that those could be done simultaneously.
I'm sorry, could you say that again? The requirement for consecutive hearings?
Yeah, so as I understood your comments, Colin, is that staff does not interpret new section G in this section five to require consecutive variance hearings, that those dimensional variances and okay. a critical areas variance could be combined into one hearing.
I think we have other sections in code. I would have to look up exactly where it is that says that we can combine multiple permit types, and we definitely do that. And so I, and hopefully it's not unclear with this section of code, but that is, it's probably in Title 21, actually in our processes that we discuss how you can do combine multiple. So if there's, you know, if one's a type 3 process and one's a type 2 process, that the type 3 process would be the process you would go under, but that you would combine it with the type 2 process so you wouldn't have to do one before the other. And that would continue to be the case with this.
Okay. Are you comfortable with that, or would you like to make a motion to amend this section? Okay. Any other comments for section 5? All right, moving along to section 6, definitions. Section 7, additional definitions. Section 8, references to marijuana. Section 9, density, dimensions, and design. Section 10, additional density, dimensions, and design. All right, section 11, land use review. Any comments on this section? All right, I'm going to move us along. Let me know if I'm going too fast. Section 12, landscaping. Section 13, additional landscaping. Section 14, review of administrative conditional use of permits. All right, section 16, revision.
Commissioner Murphy here. Can we get clarification 14 and 15, just the summary overview of a full strikeout?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see.
They were replaced by. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So it was they were not now, but they were previously replaced in Title 21 because that kind of a procedural.
So at this point, a full strikeout is to remove redundancies from the replacement. Okay.
Correct. So that's for line 14 here for administrative conditional use permit, the process for revising one, as well as one that requires a hearing. And so because that process is already taken care of, I guess it's from 2016, they're entitled 20-21-21-04-265.
Okay. So even though a full strikeout, clearly an administrative move on the cleanup side.
It is a cleanup, and yeah. The process is already established. I guess the other reason is because of the terminology, as opposed to making a revision to a conditional use permit and making an amendment to a conditional use permit. So it'd be called an amendment, like a minor or a major amendment in Title 21.
Okay. Yep.
And so here it's a revision and it's not necessary to have in code.
Understood. Thank you.
Yep.
Other comments for section 14? Okay, if there's no motion to amend, I'm going to move us along to section 15, revision of hearing examiner conditional use permit. Section 16, transfer of development rights. Section 17, open space plan. Section 18, land use and development procedures, definitions. All right, we got through this pretty fast. And section 19, land use and development procedures, review authority. Okay, so thank you all for letting us walk through that section by section. At this point, do we make a motion? Or the motion's already been on the table. We've had a second, we've deliberated. So now I'm gonna call the question. So all those in favor of the feedback with amendments and the way that the recommendations stand, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye or raising your hand. Opposed? And abstention. All right, so recommendations passed. Thank you. Yes, sir.
We have findings of fact and conclusions of wellness. So are we going to take that down, or
do you want to turn that on and just ask?
Sure. Amanda, we had findings of facts and conclusions of law presented and recommendation presented by staff. Having reviewed that, I thought it was appropriate if we didn't have any amendments. Is it in order to go ahead and take that now?
Yeah, if you'd like, if someone wants to propose a motion to consider the findings of fact, then we'll take a vote on that. And then you can actually consider the findings of fact and take a vote on whether or not to approve them. So it'll be two votes.
All right, so I will entertain a motion if that is the will of the commission tonight.
I move that we adopt the findings of fact, conclusions, and recommendation as presented to staff, as presented by staff this evening.
I'll second it.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Bow. We have a second. Further discussion on the motion? So, hearing nothing, all those in favor of accepting the motion, indicate by saying, those approved, indicate by saying aye or raise your hand. Opposed? And abstention. All right, we're getting business done. The motion passes. Thank you.
So that motion would be to consider, because usually they have to be at separate meetings. So now we need another vote to actually approve them now that you've approved the option to consider them tonight. It's a little extra Robert's rule-ish, but that's how it goes.
So I would entertain a motion to approve the considerations that we just approved. And I see Commissioner Murphy, are you making that motion or?
I would, yeah. So I would move that we approve the findings of fact that are now available and on the table by protocol.
And a second, thank you, Commissioner Beam. Additional deliberations discussion? All those in favor, please indicate approval by raising your hand or saying aye. Opposed? And abstention. So that motion carries. Thank you. Moving along on our agenda, I'm wondering, should we move into the bike and electric vehicle code update with Melissa Shoemake at this point?
Eric is available online now, so I would defer to him to go.
All right, so I think we're going to regroup, and thank you, Mr. Baker, for joining us this evening. We are going to move into the work study for the countywide planning policies update with Kitsap County Deputy Administrator Eric Baker. Thank you.
Evening, everybody. I apologize for my tardiness. My name is Eric Baker. I'm the Deputy County Administrator for Kitsap County, and I'm here to talk about the countywide planning policy update that was recently approved by the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. I'm going to share my screen. I believe all the documents have been made available to you. Everybody see what looks like a table? Starts with this appendix B1 on the top. All right. So the Puget Sound Regional Council, through Vision 2050, back in 2020 and 21, adopted new population and employment targets for each jurisdiction. The Puget Sound Regional Council is made up of King, Pierce, Snohomish, and Kitsap County and its cities. Through negotiations of the cities and the county, which of course was a little bit sporty at times, the organization came to a conclusion on exactly how they wanted to distribute population, focusing growth on centers and focusing growth on high capacity transit areas. Obviously, on the other side of the sound, that really is light rail generated, For Kitsap County, that really is focused on our ferry system as well as our bus system. So through that, the Vision 2050 set certain population and employment targets for geographies in Kitsap County. An example of geographies would be what they call metropolitan cities. That would be Bremerton. Core cities would be Silverdale. And then high capacity transit communities would be Bainbridge Island, Kingston, Port Orchard, its UGA, Polsbo, and its UGA. And then you have urban unincorporated, which is the Central Kitsap Urban Growth Area. That's that area in between Rydell and Barker Creek on that kind of East Bremerton area. And then lastly, you have rural areas. Obviously, the amount of growth that is supposed to be taken is moves from top to bottom. So metropolitan cities get the most, rural areas get the least. So with that, the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, their Land Use Technical Advisory Committee, made up of the cities, the tribes, and the county, sat down and talked about, okay, how much population does this mean for each jurisdiction? And for certain jurisdictions that have both a city and a urban growth area, how are we going to split that up between what's inside the city boundaries and what's going to be inside the urban growth area boundaries? So through a series of discussions through early this year, we came to conclusions that, again, was focusing most growth in Bremerton, focused a significant amount of growth in Silverdale, and then also establish a certain amount of growth for Kingston. Port Orchard is taking a substantial amount of growth. So from here, I'm going to kind of walk through some of the population numbers you see. The population forecast in Vision 2050 is, not surprisingly, through 2050. However, the Growth Management Act indicates that the jurisdictions must plan for a 20-year planning horizon. So for us, that's 2044. So we took the 2050 projections and we shrunk them to 2044. And then from there, we went about distributing them amongst the jurisdictions. So we started with the 2020 census population, and then we looked at population growth. What you're seeing here between 2020 and 2044, the city of Bremerton, that is just the city itself, is looking at growing by more than 20,000 people, and its urban growth area, another 2,700. The city itself is supposed to be taking the most. The UGA, again, generally takes less. The Silverdale urban growth area is looking to grow almost 10,000 people. Bainbridge Island is about 4,500. Kingston is 3,200. Why is that number so much higher than before? Kingston is now a high-capacity transit community, which indicates that due to its multiple ferry systems, a certain amount of growth is planned for that area rather than other parts of the county. Again, that ferry service is our high capacity transit, largely for a majority of Kitsap County. And then Port Orchard. Here you're noticing a substantial population growth of 10,500 people. That's actually more than we're planning for Silverdale. They are seeing a huge boom, and that 10,500 is largely educated by the number of permits they currently have in the pipeline. So they have a lot of permits that are coming online. Anybody who's been over in the McCormick area, the Sydney Sedgwick area, know that there's a substantial amount of multifamily as well as single family growth happening on that side of the freeway, all within the city of Port Orchard boundary. Then you have the Port Orchard urban growth area at 3,500, and then Polsbo has 4,500 and then 1,000 within its UGA. The Central Kitsap UGA is classified as lower focused by the Puget Sound Regional Council. Thus, while it is quite large in size, it is expected to take less population. This is largely due to the fact that it is not currently associated with any city, and does not have any plan to annex in the near future. And then lastly, the rural areas. 5,400 is a very small number. It is the smallest number that we have planned for since we had comprehensive plans first established in 1998. Again, we're trying to protect the rural areas from growth. We're trying to focus growth in the cities and urban areas. So the countywide planning policies were largely updated in two main areas. I'm starting here on Appendix B1. That's population distribution through 2044, which I went through in depth. And then you have the employment, which again, we're looking at trying to trying to grow a one-to-one jobs housing balance. Kitsap County has a large amount of housing, less employment. That is a little bit skewed by the fact that we have two military installations that we don't really plan for. They're their own autonomous entity. We try to work around them, but of course they are military installations. So they don't share a lot about their future growth over 20 years, what's going to come, what's not going to come. So the employment can be a little bit skewed. I won't go through the numbers quite at length, but again, Bremerton is taking the a lion's share of jobs. Silverdale's taking the most, the second most. And then the cities and Kingston are also looking at a substantial amount. So basically the changes to the countywide planning policies that were adopted by the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council in October is this Appendix B1 and B2, which again establishes the framework for each of our comprehensive plans that need to be updated in 2024, each of the cities and the county, to move forward and establish how much certain areas are going to grow and how we're going to accommodate that growth with infrastructure and how we're going to address any environmental impacts. Kitsap County has developed an ordinance, the way that the Kitsap region, countywide planning policies must be handled is that the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council approves a document. That document comes to the county. The county then adopts an ordinance. That's the document that you see before you today. Again, the only two portions of the countywide planning policies that are changing are Appendix B1 and B2, and that those after adoption of the ordinance then go to the cities and become reality for all of our comprehensive planning purposes. So is the Planning Commission interested in me pulling up the ordinance itself? It is relatively procedural in nature, basically describes everything I just said verbally. Leading from the Kitsap, from the Puget Sound Regional Council process to the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council process to where we are today. But I can go through that section by section if that's of interest. Oh, please don't tell me I cut it out 20 minutes
ago. No, that's fine. Thank you. I think we're just taking a minute to see if there's any questions and if there's a preference to direct staff on how we'd like to proceed. Do we want to visit the ordinance, or we did have that as part of our meeting packet. So hopefully you did have an opportunity to read that in advance. Go ahead.
Again, it's a short ordinance. We had a chance to review it. It's not substantive, it's history. And so personally, I don't think it's necessary. We've got a lot of other things on the agenda tonight.
Well, excellent. Are there any questions the Planning Commission members may have about these population projections? Obviously, you're going to get to spend a lot of quality time with them as we go through the comprehensive plan between now and 2024. But I can answer any questions as I've been involved in the negotiations all the way from the Puget Sound Regional Council to where we are today.
Eric, just for the sake, if I might, Aaron Murphy, Planning Commissioner. Just at the 50,000 foot level, I know people get asked, when we hear that this is kind of top-down information from the state, is there anywhere along the way that we even have the right to legally disagree with the information being provided or make different decisions at the county level than the information that's being handed down from the state or regional council?
Well, the state is, of course, handled by the Growth Management Act, and most of the Growth Management Act is determined by the Growth Management Hearings Board, oftentimes through appeals. Their requirement is that we fall within the Office of Financial Management's range of population and employment, or actually OFM's population, employment securities, employment. So that range is pretty wide. However, case law pretty much indicates that you have to have a really good reason why you're not taking the intermediate number. So largely what you're seeing here, the Puget Sound Regional Council and OFM Intermediate are pretty much going to line up countywide pretty well for us. So deviating from that is is a risk. You have to have a reason why you don't expect growth to come to your community. And I think over time, we have had some conversations about, okay, if we don't zone it, they won't come. Well, we have noted that people have continued to come. They just haven't come to where we want them to. They've been with a lot of pressure in the rural areas, and it really has had an impact on our housing prices. Again, supply demand, more people want to move here, fewer homes. The price tends to go up, and we're losing a lot of people out of our community. As for pushing back on the Puget Sound Regional Council, Pierce, Snohomish, and Kitsap County pushed back heavily on the Puget Sound Regional Council as we were establishing these to get where we are today. There was a lot of interest in a lot, either a greater growth in certain areas or a lot less growth in other areas. Like I mentioned, the Central Kitsap Urban Growth Area is not getting a lot of people. It's 24,000 people in size. It has wastewater service. It has a bus service. Yet we aren't planning for growth solely because it's not planned to be annexed. So we pushed back heavily on that and ultimately ended up at a compromise point. But on certain area issues, I will say that we lost. It is very important that we are consistent with our multi-county planning policies through Vision 2050, as they are our avenue to large quantities of our federal transportation dollars. If we don't adhere to that regional plan, there's a possibility that our plan would not be certified and we lose out on money that goes to projects like Ridgetop Boulevard right now, the Buckland Hill Bridge. A lot of the work in Kingston that's going on is going to be funded with these types of funds. So the short answer to your question is you could push back. You'd have to have a good reason. And of course, we are so close and now so connected to the other side of the Puget Sound and their growth, it's really hard to argue that with that direct connection, we're not going to see that growth, especially because over the last 5 to 8 years, growth management has come to Kitsap County in earnest. All the things that we've said we wanted growth management to do are happening. Port Orchard, Polesbo, growing faster than any other place in the county. Bremerton is also growing. Whether people view that as a positive or a negative, it's hard to say that growth management is not meeting its intent. And again, saying no will take less growth, or we'd like to see growth go somewhere else, leads us down the road for legal challenge or potential lack of certification by the Puget Sound Regional Council. Both are perilous.
Understood. Yeah, and thank you for the explanation. And it wasn't to state any particular opinion of mine, except to say that what you might respond, which you did, could cover some public question type feedback that could arise should somebody listen to the recording or show up at a meeting once in a while. But I do appreciate that some of this going to bat has already happened. So it's just that reminder that yes, there's sequence. Yes, some things have already occurred. Yes, we've fought our battles. And yes, if you have an opinion, please get involved.
Yes, thank you very much.
And I had a question or a comment regarding the employment numbers related to Bremerton and the asterisk there and your comment to the federal government and being so closely tied to the Department of Defense, the job opportunities, the military that comes and stays here, supports our economy here in Kitsap County. I do have concerns that when I look at our housing, if we don't take into account the growth that's happening at the three installations in Kitsap County, I feel like we're going to continually be underhoused or not have the inventory to support those younger families or folks on fixed incomes. And so that's just a comment. I really appreciate Section M, where you speak to the coordination with our federal partners. Just wanted that noted.
Yeah, we're definitely not disregarding them. It's just a lot harder for us to plan for how they're going to grow over time because we can't establish a target for them and say you will do blank, and B, they aren't necessarily willing to share with us what their plans are going to be over the next 10 to 15 years. So we take a crystal ball that's a lot cloudier than other portions and include it in the plan, though I will say that there are some issues with it. But everything you just brought up is 100% true. How do we go about ensuring that there is housing for our young families, for our older folks who are looking to age in place. We're very single family residential heavy, which is the second most expensive type of housing over the last 5 years in regards to growth in cost. And how are we going to branch out and provide other more diverse housing stock? And that's going to be a big chunk of what the comprehensive plan is going to be wrestling with over the next 2 years.
Other questions for Eric? Thank you for the information. We really do appreciate the brief, the briefing, the work study, keeping us updated to the progress being made. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I do expect that we probably will be coming back to you at the next meeting with a public hearing, so we can hear some of the public comment that we may be receiving on this. And then from there, we'll also be drafting up findings of fact so we can move forward. So thank you very much for your time, and I greatly apologize for my tardiness.
Always good to see you. Thank you. I'm going to move us along to the deliberation and recommendations for the bike and electric vehicle code update with Melissa Shoemake.
Thank you. Melissa Shoemake, senior planner for long range planning. I also don't have a presentation. I have the draft ordinance with the, there are actually two changes. There's the one change that was recommended based on the public comments received. I also noticed that there was a Scrivener error that I corrected. So we can go through the public comments. Largely, as you know from what you received, it was either something that was outside the scope, a lot of bike lane comments again, a few things that were outside of the scope as far as just thinking it wasn't necessary, and then some things where folks wanted, you know, specific brands or specific locations, both of which are somewhat out of the control of the ordinance because it's really based on development and redevelopment. So I can open up either of those documents. And certainly if there's any other suggestions that the planning commissioners would like to make, we can work those into the draft ordinance as well. So I'll leave it at that, honestly.
Okay, so we are again entering into deliberations. So I believe that does take a motion to start the process.
I move that we adopt the, or recommend to the county commissioners that it enact the ordinance as presented by staff as may be amended by the planning commission this evening.
Second.
And a second. Thank you, Commissioner Murphy. So we are entering into discussion deliberations. Does it make sense to use the same format as before, where we go section by section? Is that the preference of the commission? Seemed like that worked for us. So let's go ahead and just, if that works for you.
Yeah, it's a little bit different format because mine is the actual ordinance draft. So it's, there's a lot of kind of right. Procedural information in there, but we can certainly work through it that way.
So we all do have that document, mm-hmm. or we hopefully spend some time reviewing, but starting on section one, looks like we'll be scrolling together here.
Yep. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Under general findings, it would be helpful to know, were there changes to this section at all?
No, I apologize. The changes that are in here are not actually in the ordinance draft that was sent out because they were so minimal. Okay. So they're highlighted as we get to them in here so that I could make sure that everybody saw them.
Okay.
But there's literally two changes so far.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you want to take us to where those section changes are? That sure. Might be easier.
Yeah, I can do. Erin, did you want to say something?
No, I was just going to make recommendation that Director Shoemake make sure that we just go to the lines on the pages that needed our attention.
And so this is on page 3. This is in response to William Palmer's comment at the public hearing. He noted that the code reference to the state building code that has been adopted and is going into effect next July was not actually referenced in this ordinance, which was correct. It was certainly referenced in the staff report and had not made it into this ordinance. So that insertion, and then obviously this gets renumbered to number 4. And then the other change that I had noticed, this had referenced chapter 17 rather than 1404. So mostly a Scrivener's error.
Okay, so if we go back up to that first highlighted comment, is there discussion, questions? Hearing nothing, moving along to the change to the reference, just that error that was corrected. Hearing any questions or concerns on this item? All right. Hearing nothing, seeing no hands raised. The motion is on the table and seconded, so I will call for the question. So, yes, sir. Did you have a
thought? No, I think there's other new sections.
Oh, there's other new sections.
Yeah, okay. I do want to discuss.
I'm sorry.
I want to discuss section 9.
Okay.
If we
Does that make sense to jump to those first new sections?
Yeah, I mean, the way this one is formatted is it's not changes to existing code in large part. There's a couple amendments in a couple sections, but largely it's all new sections. And so that's why there's not a lot of underlining or crossouts in this ordinance. And so these are just new definitions in 5 and 6. And then 7, it's literally the only change is like at the very end of this section, because it's striking out what the previous bicycle code provisions were. And then in section 8, same thing, it's adding the part that references how the incentives work when you use the incentives for the bicycle parking or the electric vehicle charging. So they were put in the appropriate spots in the existing code. So section 9 is where, you know, the new sections start. Section 9 is for the bicycle parking, section 10 is for the electric vehicle charging. Was there a specific spot you were referencing in section 9?
I want to spend, if I can, just in deliberation talking about the section 9A2.
Okay.
And that's the where bicycle parking shall be located. We talked about this a little bit during one of our meetings. What I've done is I've kind of measured out what we're talking about here to make sure all together. So let's take a Costco. It's got more than 500 parking spaces. So we're talking about 50 bicycle places. Each of those bicycle places are 40 inches long, a little over a yard. And so when we're talking about Costco, we have to have a little more than half a football field long of bicycle parking within 100 feet of the front entrance, of the main entrance. And we said, boy, you know, people come into Costco, they don't really bring their bikes to bring, you know, things of toilet paper home. And the response was, well, you know, it would be for employees. Well, there's no reason to take area that is set up for people who may have disabilities to get in and out of their car, to load vehicles for with their shopping stuff, or to move the cart area at Costco in order to have 50 yards of bicycles within 100 feet of the front door. And you look at the other development that's happened in Silverdale over the last 5 years, the hospital. Okay, so hospital, we need 50 yards of bicycle racks within 100 feet of the front door. And so again, if it's employees, employees can go someplace other than the front door. The front door is where, again, you're unloading people with disabilities. The senior housing facility that just went up across from the trails. We've got, I think, 300, 400 parking spaces set aside for that. We're going to have that 35, 40 yards worth of bicycle racks right at the entry, within 100 feet of the entry. Again, I'm not seeing a lot of those residents riding their bikes to and from. Now, it may be employees, but again, they don't have to be at the front. Right, we're trying to unload and unload. Next, you've got the trails itself. Okay, we've got all that area. Now, under this ordinance, does Sprouts have to have so many? Does the Oshkosh by gosh have to have so many racks in front of it? What I would advocate is, I'm all for bicycles, and I think it's important we have some place to park. But let's do a little more discretion in terms of where that parking has to be rather than right at the front door. So I'm going to propose an amendment to this section that just gets rid of that piece. And so what I would do would be to strike out the words as close as possible, but no further than 100 feet to the main entrance of the structure. And instead it would read, bicycle parking shall be located to be protected from motor vehicle maneuvering adjacent to sidewalk or pedestrian walkway that serves the building entrance. Okay, so that way, again, we're not forcing, when I look at it, just something that doesn't make a whole lot of sense for the utility of the building. And we're doing something, you know, kind of, if we build it, they will come kind of approach to this. So that's my comment.
And can you verify that I captured what you said as your amendment accurately?
I'm sorry, can you say that again, Melissa?
Oh, I said, can you verify that I captured your proposed amendment?
Oh, can you see? I don't think we can see that.
Yeah,
far.
You might want to read it.
Oh, okay.
Into the record.
Sorry, I'm used to everybody just being able to see the screen.
Melissa, that is okay. you got it right what I was proposing. I do have one other issue, and I thought maybe that could be clarified. Let's take the hospital, Melissa. It's got a parking structure. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what you've said here is that if there's any covered surface parking, the bicycle area also has to be covered. Since it's a parking structure, I don't know, is that surface parking, or does that mean all 50 of the hospital's bicycle racks at the front door would also have to have a separate building covering those racks?
I would interpret that to mean that the racks should be covered, but if the commission prefers your language, they would not necessarily need to be at the front door, and they could
right.
just be in a
yeah,
section
so, so again,
of the parking
I,
structure.
I could see
way.
A situation where you say, hey, it's a good idea. Let's form our employees. Let's have covered. Let's put it in the structure. Mm-hmm. We don't need it at the front door. Let's put them in the building structure itself. So, yeah. Okay, thank you.
If I could ask, I know we've got it on the screen there, but so we struck out as close as possible, but no further away than 100 feet to the main entrance of the structure. And then are you adding to be?
Yes,
the words to be.
The words to
That's
be
it.
Before the word protected.
Got it. Thank you very much.
And just from a commentary perspective, I am in complete agreement with Commissioner Shattuck. In fact, his two examples immediately put you in a position where 3.5 feet per width of bike times the number of bikes, you are already further than 100 feet. And now we have to talk about, did the bike rack start before 100 feet or end after 100 feet? So it would have been in conflict with anything that has at scale parking based on building size. And I do agree that, you know, if the intent is for not the visitor, so to speak, or the arriving occupant, like in a hospital, but as actually for employee, well, there's a very different side of house between the served and the service, and you're actually implying the service side, which is quote unquote back of house,
right? Not the main entrance, right?
Also, we did. We actually need a second for your motion.
Second.
Okay, so I hear a second from Commissioner Murphy.
And I was just going to suggest, because Section 9 is kind of long, if we wanted to make any other changes, maybe vote on just this amendment first. I don't know. What do you think, Amanda?
We can do that. We can do it by paragraph. So if this is one section, we can take the vote on it now, and then we'll just move to the next piece.
Yes.
So I'm hearing a couple different options here. We can go paragraph by paragraph in this new section so we're all clear and we have an opportunity to ask questions, make changes, and move along, or we can just tackle it as a whole section. Is there a preference?
I'd prefer to go ahead and vote on the amendment while all the wording and the discussion is fresh at the paragraph level, and then we will have a complete document when we reach the end. So all I'm missing to make a motion is I can't see what number two is underneath on the screen.
It is.
Great. So I would move to make the amendments as proposed by Commissioner Shattuck under section 17.490.070A2.
Okay, so is that a different motion or is that the same motion?
No, I'm moving to approve these amendments at the paragraph level, and I've referenced the paragraph.
Okay. So there was a second?
No, I think we need it.
We need a second, yes.
I second that.
Oh, okay. We have got my fellow commissioner here seconding that. Any further discussion on how we proceed? All those in favor with approval indicate by saying aye or raise your hand. Any opposed or opposition? Or abstentions. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. All righty. So let's go. It sounds like we've got this one tackled. Okay. So let's start. So we agreed to go section by section or paragraph by paragraph. So if we go up one, we just finished up with item number two in section nine. If we go up to item number one, is there any questions or comments on this paragraph? Hearing nothing, we've already addressed item number two. Item number three, questions? And I'm going to lump four and five together. Question six regarding bicycle parking dimensions. And there's a large section here with pictures. Okay, not hearing anything. Paragraph and section seven. All right, and then we're moving into item B, which is incentives for bicycle parking. Any questions on this paragraph section? Moving along to new section 10, which is off-street parking and loading regarding the vehicle charging standards. So if we look under item A, there's a number of things here. So I'll just take these one by one. Item number one, are there any questions, comments, deliberations? Item number two.
At the overarching section 10, during the comment period, Melissa, did we find any of the public comments to be reasonable for consideration? If I was to go look at the matrix, I don't have it up right now. Or was everything fairly sort of personal request or outside scope or?
Yeah, it was, I would say largely there were multiple requests for a Tesla supercharger and or specifically level three chargers. There were specific locations requested, including downtown Bremerton, which is obviously not just outside our scope, but outside of our jurisdiction, and other charging network requests, like Volta and I think ChargePoint both came up. It was largely, you know, more about what folks wanted to see as far as what their preference was, not necessarily the text of the amendment. Okay.
And is there any response to the comment that did come from public comment period about the concern of sort of picking winners and losers if what, by the time we actually get this done, what if we're doing hydrogen cars instead of electric cars?
I mean, we don't really have a lot of choice because of the state building code that's already been approved and set to take effect. You know, the only real change, aside from the building code has some exceptions that we didn't move forward, is our timeline is quicker than the building codes. And so that's really a state level question, which I would say is outside of our scope.
Yeah, I just wanted to record that for the public.
Thank you.
And I actually had a question under the minimum standards item A1, where one electric vehicle charging space is required for every 10 standard vehicle parking spaces required rounded up. Is this a state requirement? Help me remember. Is this a state requirement or is this a local interpretation?
So that was basically out of conversation with the county attorney that I worked with when drafting this. So somewhat of a local interpretation. The code requirements in 1404 that we're referencing are actually in that section 4, I believe, that we kind of scrolled through earlier. Sorry for the scrolling. I know it kind of makes people sick. So that's where, you know, they kind of reference it just as 10% of total parking spaces. And they don't, the only times I would say that, you know, people are concerned about the effect on single family homes, for instance. They're specifically excluded. And so that's, you know, they're not going to be required to have one because they're rounded up, for example. I'm certainly open to, you know, changing that so that it's just the same way as what the state has here in their table. But that was kind of the county attorney's thought on it.
Well, that's helpful to kind of understand the background. So you're suggesting it could read one electric vehicle charging space is required for 10% of the total parking spaces, so it matches?
Yeah, you would just table. Say one per 10 or 10% of the total parking spaces. But even then you would probably still, let's see here. This is the other part of it. Calculations shall be rounded up to the nearest whole number. And so if, for instance, the required number of parking spaces was 14, and so you were required to have like 1.4, that would still round up to 2.
Got it. And then there's places where it's not required in this table.
Right. And this is, it's basically single family home or duplex or dwelling units that have a private garage. So for instance, in a fancy apartment building that has private garages for each unit.
Well, it seems like if we have it listed under a table, couldn't we just reference the table in, as opposed to spelling out 1 in 10?
That is certainly an option. One reason that we did it the way that we currently have it is because for folks who are maybe looking at doing a bit new business but aren't themselves a developer, they're largely going to look at Title 17 for code requirements. They're not necessarily going to know to go look at our building code. And even when you go look at the building code, it's not as simply worded as the zoning code is, which is why we had included it here in 17 as well.
Thank you. Yes, Commissioner Beam.
I noticed when we read this whole thing, there are no level 3 chargers in the county. How do we go about incentivizing somebody to put a level 3 charger in? Because that's the one that people are going to want. If they've got the problem, they're not going to want to sit there for 5 hours. They want something that they can handle it right now. How do we go about incentivizing level three chargers.
So hang on, just a minute. We're still in section A, which is the minimum standards. Section B is about incentives. So if you could hold that, Melissa, yes, your feedback to that question, yes, to that section. Let's finish up with section A. See if there's any other questions or suggestions, deliberations. Okay, not hearing any. Let's move along to incentives for electric vehicle charging. If you could answer Commissioner Beam's comment question, that would be great.
Yes, place to start. Yeah, currently we have it as a 5% reduction for the required parking on site. One of the things that I think has come up throughout both the code development process, as well as I think there was maybe one question about it during the public comment period as well, was that 5% seems like not very much. And by some accounts, certainly it is. That's part of why we allow the incentives to stack up to the 25% reduction. Part of it was that even though some of these things may be more difficult or more expensive to do than others, then you still allow folks to have the option of doing what incentive makes sense for their project. And that's why they're all kind of valued the same. But if folks think that like a level three charger should be incentivized more, certainly that's a suggestion that would make sense.
Yes.
Question. Line one there, provision of level three charging stations, 480 volts, rather than level two charging stations, shall allow for reduction of required parking on site of 5%. Required EV parking, right?
Required parking total.
So, required total parking?
Yeah, so parking? That's what this part up here is talking about. So it's the required vehicle parking is reduced. The number of EV charging spaces doesn't get reduced, because then you would essentially reduce yourself out of everything if you looked at it the right way. And that was, I think, actually a comment that got brought up at a planning commission meeting earlier this year. So that's the required vehicle parking. So say 100 vehicle parking spaces are required on site. That would be 5 fewer vehicle parking spaces.
But if the reduction from 100 to 95 then gets you to the point where you need 9, not 10 EV spaces, you're saying that does not occur?
Right. The number of EV spaces is based on the pre-reduction number.
Okay. Should it say then in B that the standard development required parking amount is what's being reduced?
I mean, that's what I tried to get to with this language, but I'm certainly open to.
Oh, I see. Okay. Only the amount of required vehicle parking is reduced. It could say required non-EV vehicle parking. That would be crystal clear.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, that'd be more clear.
And you can do that in front of the semicolon on the line above, actually. It says when incentives are used, only the amount of required non-EV vehicle parking on the site is reduced by applying the incentive, basically.
Yeah, so that's a great suggestion. I'm wondering if there's any other deliberation on this section before we vote on this amendment to this section. Okay, seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Can we at least get through B1, 2, and 3 and do that as a group if we didn't finish?
Sure. That was my question, if there was any other comments for the section, for this B section. But I'm including, is there any other feedback for 1, 2, or 3 under B? Okay, seeing none.
I move that we adopt the amendment to section 10, subsection B, as proposed by Commissioner Murphy.
second. Is there a second?
So I will need Commissioner Murphy to read the actual.
I can do that. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so section 10, item B, the language has changed to the following. Incentives for electric vehicle charging. When incentives are used, only the amount of required non-EV vehicle parking on the site is reduced, semicolon. The number of electric vehicle charging spaces is calculated from the required vehicle parking amount prior to use of any reductions. I think that actually need to take non-EV
out.
Not this one here. Yep, okay. Exactly. Only the one above prior to the semicolon.
Okay.
So after the semicolon, it now reads, the number of electric vehicle charging spaces is calculated from their required vehicle parking amount prior to use of any reductions.
Okay, thank you. There was a motion to accept the amended language, and I believe a second. I saw Commissioner Beam's hand go up. Is that, or is there a question, Commissioner Beam?
No, I'm second again.
Okay, thank you so much. Any further discussion on this item? All those in favor of the approved amendment, please indicate by raising your hand or saying aye. Opposed? An abstention. Okay, motion carries. Good conversation. Moving us along to section 11. Looks like there was not a whole lot there. Any question? Section 12 and 13 look administrative. So I'm just gonna lump those two together and ask if there's any changes or deliberations requests regarding those two sections. All right, so I'm gonna look to our clerk to remind me next steps.
So if now. Sorry, one. I just highlighted the adoption date. That's probably going to change. I was reminded by the board that due to the election, having the work study in December and the adoption in January was a bad idea. So that date is going to get pushed back some.
Thank you.
Just so you're all aware.
Did I see a hand? Commissioner Murphy, did you? Okay. So Amanda, next.
So steps. Now if there's no other amendments to any other sections, then we would just call a question to the main motion, which would be to approve as amended with everything that you all have voted on.
So. Okay, so I will entertain a motion to approve all the amendments.
Vote.
I'm sorry?
Just the vote.
Oh, we've already got the amendment. Okay, so all those in favor, please indicate your approval by saying aye or raising your hand to the content that we just discussed. Any opposed? And any abstentions? So Commissioner Beam, your hand was up. I'm sorry, were you indicating approval?
Well, my question was that in public comment number, I think it's 15, it addressed whether or not these sort of incentives have been looked at from an economic standpoint. Are we going to address that at all?
I believe my interpretation of the comment that was made at the public hearing, and I did go back and re-listen to it so that I could make sure that I captured it appropriately in the transcription, was not the economic portion of it necessarily. It was basically doing both the bicycle parking and the electric vehicle charging requirements, not as requirements at all, but purely on an incentive basis. And the response was that wasn't the direction that the commissioners gave us for the bicycle parking. Bicycle parking had already been required in the code. It just was very, very small and not very good guidance. And again, going back to the state's requirements in the building code that will be effective next July, that pretty clearly is a requirement and is not something that we could accomplish with just incentives.
Yeah, I just read into that the comment talked about the SEPA not looking at what the economic impact of this whole thing was.
Right. And SEPA is not really meant to look at the economic impact. I think that the comment for SEPA was about the impact on the electrical grid. And that's something that all of the state's energy utilities are working on and aware of, because again, of the state's requirement for the building code changes. And it's already part of the electrification of the transportation network plan that PSE has.
And I think we've addressed part of that by saying the more incentives towards the level three chargers. I think that helps.
So I'd like to go back and just record the vote on that last motion to make sure we have that all accurate. So I'm going to just call for that vote again, so we can make sure we can get everybody. So all those in favor of approving the document as amended in all sections, please indicate your approval by saying yes or raising your hand. All those opposed? And are there any abstentions? Okay, thank you. Motion carries. All right, so we are working our way through tonight. This is our second and last general public comment section. Are there any any attendees wishing to comment? Okay, seeing none, I will move us to the good of the order and commissioner comments.
I would just do make a comment that Stacy's filling in on zero notice was beautifully done, and we appreciate you doing that and hope you feel supported.
Oh, thank you so much. Any other comments for the
If I could just thank Melissa, I thought you did a great job of putting this together the last few months, and well done.
Yes,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes. For that matter, I think both of the deliberations and all the information was very helpful this evening. So any other comments? Hearing none, I will adjourn tonight's meeting. Thank you all for your attendance. See you at our next meeting on the 15th. Good night.
All right.
Thank you, everyone.